Good morning, church, again. I'm so grateful to have you here with us in person and online. Grateful to be on this journey of faith with you, where, as John reminded us, these heroes of the faith, these heroes of epic proportions, were flawed, normal human beings. And the difference was their faith. And so that's what we're leaning into today as we continue. I want to recap a little bit for you, because this week we're doing Joseph part two, because while there are great heroes of the faith where we can take and look at a circumstance in their life where they had the opportunity to really lean out there and show us tremendous faith, Joseph's life is like an opportunity for heroic faith. Joseph is caught in this series of unfortunate events that seems to go on and on, sequel after sequel. And so I want to remind us, last week we talked about having the faith to wait. When we receive a promise from God, whether that's in prayer or something spoken over us, or whether it's one of the promises in Scripture, that sometimes we need to have the faith to wait to share that, because not everything is meant to be shared out of the gate, as 17-year-old Joseph learned in a very challenging and difficult way. Also, we learned about having the faith to stand. The faith to stand for what's right, even when others invite us to fall. Even when the world invites us to fall. And in that standing and doing what's right and being who God called us to be, we dealt with the reality that sometimes God will allow us to be in a season of captivity so that he can reveal his glory to others. Sometimes God will allow us to be in a season of testing and trying and unfairness to reveal his glory to our captors. And as difficult as a word as that is, to remember that God is faithful in the midst of that, and as we lean forward in faith, to not lose hope. And so I want us to remember that as we got to the end of last week, right, we had Joseph, who was in the service to Potiphar. He's been enslaved and imprisoned because his brother sold him off, but it's okay because he's experiencing favor in Potiphar's house. And then we have this little dilemma. The kids aren't in the room where Potiphar, well, some of you are online, it's okay, I will still be appropriate, but Potiphar's wife gets the hots for Joseph because he is a strapping, strong young man. And Joseph is standing saying, I will not sin against God. I will not sin against my master and discredit God in the midst of that. And Potiphar's wife falsely accuses Joseph, which is really not fair because Joseph stood and did what was right. And we want the Disney ending where God swoops down and rescues, but that didn't happen. As a matter of fact, we left off with Joseph back in prison. Like, Potiphar himself didn't even realize his wife was the cheat. Like, how unfair was that, right? And yet, it wasn't just that Joseph was back in prison. Because Joseph wasn't in prison alone. The Lord was with him. And in that, I invited you to wait on that word from God, to wait on God's timing, to not rush ahead and make your own plan like I tend to do sometimes, find my own solution for the word to get to what God has told me. I invited us to have the faith to stand for what we know is right, to embrace godly truths instead of worldly truths, whether that is at work, whether that is in how we parent, how we function in our marriage, or how we function in our checkbooks. To stand even when it costs us. Because standing for what is right will sometimes cost us dearly, just like it did Joseph. So with all of that happiness, right? With all of that challenge, Joseph continues to exhibit heroic faith. So I want to invite you into the rest of the story with me. I want us to pick up where we left off, and I want to invite you to read with me. We're going to be in Genesis. We're going to start out in Genesis 39b and read forward a little bit. Would you read with me? I think we have that. So Potiphar left everything he had in Joseph's care. Okay, pause right there. Hold on, sorry. We're going to skip forward a little bit. I think I probably gave them the wrong passage there. Let me read to you Genesis 39. We're going to read verses 20 to 23. It says, but while Joseph was there in prison, the Lord was with him. He showed him kindness and granted him favor in the eyes of the prison warden. So the warden put Joseph in charge of all those held in the prison, and he was made responsible for all that was done there. The warden paid no attention to anything under Joseph's care because the Lord was with Joseph and gave him success in whatever he did. Does that sound familiar to you? Does that sound like what happened when Joseph was imprisoned in Potiphar's house? Like Potiphar put Joseph in charge. Now the warden is putting Joseph in charge. And it can be really easy in that moment to be like, well, Joseph's got it made. Like, what does prison look like if you're in charge? Except Joseph is still a captive. He has no wife. He has no children. He may be in charge, but in a culture that is completely about family, he has no idea where his family is, if his father still lives, if his little brother is there. Have you ever? Let me ask. Have you ever been in a place where you feel like you're stuck in this perpetual Groundhog Day of captivity? Like, there's good things going on, but still it's not where you're supposed to be. And no matter how hard you try, no matter how many times you do the right thing, you seem to be repeating the same pattern over and over. And you guys, sometimes that's about us. Sometimes there's a lesson we haven't learned. Sometimes God is trying to accent, get our attention on something. And sometimes it's not. Sometimes it's about other people. And so chapter 40, right? Chapter 40 takes us from Joseph's imprisonment to this phrase, right? Oops, I'm in 41. It says, sometime later, so Joseph is in prison. Sometime later, the cupbearer and the baker of the king of Egypt offended their master, the king of Egypt. Pharaoh was angry with his two officials, and he put them in the custody. So basically Pharaoh, who is the most powerful man on the planet, takes his cupbearer, which is a very powerful position, and he takes his baker, chief baker, and he throws them into prison, and they're in prison with Joseph. And so Joseph is moving along, and he sees these high officials, and Joseph is in the midst of his own stuff, right? Like, some time later has passed, and Joseph is still in prison. Joseph, who has this holding on to a promise that God gave him as a youth, that he would somehow be in charge, that he would be esteemed, that his family would surround him. And sometime later, he's still in his own mess. He's still in his own captivity. And here come these two officials, the cupbearer and the king. And what does Joseph care? I mean, the cupbearer and the baker to the king. I mean, what does Joseph care? This is the Pharaoh that has him in prison. So what's the big deal, right? Like, how is Joseph's attitude? How would my attitude be in the midst of that? But I love, as we read on in verses 6 and 7, it says, when Joseph came to them the next morning. Let me back up a little bit. These guys are in prison, and they both have a dream on the same night. Different dream. They both have a dream. And they know that it's more than a dream. You ever had one of those dreams like you know there's something more to it? But they can't figure it out. And they're distressed by that. And they know there's something in the dream, but they don't have answers, and it is troubling them deeply, because being in prison isn't bad enough, but you think there's some answer and you can't quite put your finger on it. And so that's where we see that it says in verse 6, chapter 40, when Joseph came to them the next morning, he saw that they were dejected. So he asked Pharaoh's officials who were in custody with him, why do you look so sad today? Can I point out that in the midst of his own imprisonment, in the midst of his own bondage and captivity, Joseph still saw the suffering of others? In the midst of a time where he could just be salty and have a really bad attitude, Joseph saw and noticed someone else's pain, someone else's discomfort. And he didn't just see it, Because we're seen, known, and loved by God, and we're supposed to see, know, and love others, right? He didn't just see it, but he actually took the time to stop and ask, why are you so sad today? He took the time to know them and to love on them. And so they tell him, like, hey, look, we had these dreams. We don't understand what they meant. Joseph can interpret their dreams. But I love how in verse 8, Joseph doesn't take credit for his gift. He says, well, it's up to God to interpret dreams, but let me tell you what God says. Now, the story unfolds for us, and the one guy, the cupbearer, his dream is a good thing. Says he's going to be restored to power, Pharaoh's going to call him back, and all is going to be well. Doesn't go so well for the baker. We don't find out what the baker did that was actually wrong, but Pharaoh ends the baker's life, and that's what the dream means, and Joseph tells him that, but he tells them both the truth about what their dreams mean. And he gives all the credit to God for the ability to interpret the dreams. He doesn't try to take that on his own. Seems like he's learned something since he was 17 with his big mouth. And so in the midst of that, though, he turns to the cupbearer, right? Actually, would you read? We should be in chapter 40, verse 14. Do we have that, Kermit? Okay. Would you read with me? This is Joseph talking to the cupbearer. But when all goes well with you, remember me and show me kindness. Mention me to Pharaoh and get me out of this prison. Get me out of here. You know what I love? What I respect, I should say. Because if it was me, I might know the interpretation to the dream. And if I'm being really honest, I might be like, oh, quid pro quo, let's work out a deal. I'll tell you what your dream means on one condition. You bust me out of this joint, right? But that's not what Joseph does. Joseph shares the good news with them. Joseph tells them, shares what God has shown him, and then says, oh, by the way, when all goes well with you, would you remember me? And Joseph didn't make the blessing contingent on being paid back. He shared the blessing without concern, right? Is it just like, does anybody else want to have that kind of character? You think God wants us to have that kind of character where we're going to bless people with God's love regardless of what they're going to do for us? Like, there might be an ask, there might be a hope, but it's not contingent. We're not going to show up at the town to bless an event the town is having if they'll give us a permit for this, or if they'll do that for Bridge Church, or if they'll show up and be like, that's not what it's about. It's about seeing and knowing and loving people, and Joseph teaches us that. Now, Joseph's given them the interpretation, right? And it goes on. Actually, I'll have you guys read chapter 40, verses 20 to 22 with me. Now the third day was Pharaoh's birthday, and he gave a feast for all his officials. He lifted up the head of the chief cupbearer, and the chief baker in the presence of his officials. He restored the chief cupbearer to his position so that he once again put the cup in Pharaoh's hand. But he impaled the chief baker just as Joseph had said to them in his interpretation. So the guy who's got quite a bit of power gets tossed into prison. He has a dream. He's greatly troubled. Joseph, the man of God, who is doing everything right, who is showing up to work every day, giving his best, being trustworthy, being righteous, being generous with the blessing of the Lord, tells him what his dream means. The interpretation comes true. It happens. If you're Joseph, or you're getting a little hopeful at this point, like, all right, the guy who's got some power is going to get me out of here. We read in verse 23, the chief cupbearer, however, did not remember Joseph. He forgot him. Have you been there? Have you ever been there where you help someone out? You do someone a solid. You show grace when you didn't need to show grace. You lean into a work project, and really, it's not your project. It's not your responsibility. But you give it your all, and you turn it over to the other person, and you let them get the credit, and you think, they're going to mention me. You give it all you've got, and over again, you just get forgotten. How do you feel? You mad at the people who forgot you? You mad at God a little bit? Like, how's your attitude? Somebody's being honest in the room, probably. A little bit discouraged, a little bit disheartened. What we learn from Joseph is that heroic faith means having faith even when we're forgotten. Genesis 41 starts, when 2 full years had passed. When 2 full years had passed, where's Joseph? Prison. Did Joseph do the cupbearer assault? Like, was he hoping to get freed from? Is Joseph in prison justly? No. Is he doing everything right? When 2 full years had passed, how do I do when 2 weeks have passed? And I'm in a bad situation. How am I when 2 months have passed and life is still unfair? Like, how often am I up in my prayer room going, God, excuse me. Excuse me, I'm doing what you asked me to do, God. It's been 2 weeks, 2 days, 2 days, God. 2 weeks, 2 months, when 2 full years had passed. Yet here is Joseph still doing his best in the midst of his captivity to honor God, to hold on to his faith and honor God. So it says when 2 full years had passed, Pharaoh had a dream, right? And I want to tell you, Pharaoh has this crazy dream, and then he wakes up and he has another version of the same dream, and nobody can interpret the dream. And Pharaoh is pretty distressed, and Pharaoh is almighty and all powerful as far as earthly people go at this point. And it says in chapter 41, verse 9, we learn, then the chief cupbearer said to Pharaoh, today I am reminded of my shortcomings. Oops. Today I'm reminded. Now, like, there's a question, right? Like, was the cupbearer really reminded of his shortcomings, or did he think, I'm going to cash in with the Pharaoh because I know somebody who can answer the Pharaoh's distress. I'm going to be the solution person in this. So he tells Pharaoh about Joseph, who interpreted the dream, and Pharaoh sends for Joseph in prison, and Joseph comes, and it says, Pharaoh sent for Joseph in 14, and Joseph gets whisked out of prison, and they clean him all up before he goes into the most powerful man on the planet. Joseph has a few choices to make. One, he goes into the most powerful man on the planet who has him in prison in the first place. And two, there's that cupbearer who has forgotten him for 2 solid years telling the Pharaoh that Joseph could solve his problems. Like, you think it even crossed his mind for a moment to go, I don't know what this crazy guy's talking about. You should have impaled him when you had the chance, Pharaoh. Or that he was a little bit salty. Like, why should I solve Pharaoh's problems? I'm imprisoned in this nation, and I don't belong here. But that's not what happens. By the way, not only is it not what happens, Joseph doesn't even take credit for what he's about to do, because he says, when Pharaoh says, I hear you can interpret this dream and tell me what it means, Joseph says, I cannot do it, but God will do it. I cannot. I'm not leaning into my own gifts. See, heroic faith isn't about pride and boasting in what God has gifted us to do, right? Heroic faith points to God in the midst. Church, are we okay? Like, are y'all awake today? Do I need to get Mark to zoom some espresso over here? Like, Heroic faith isn't about taking credit for ourselves. It's about giving glory to God. He says, I cannot, but God will. Now, Joseph goes on to interpret the dream Pharaoh's had. He says, look, here's the deal. There's going to be 7 years of plenty. All the fields, everything's going to be there. All the grain is going to happen. But right after that, there's going to be 7 years of famine. And so what you need to do is you need to store up in the 7 years of plenty, because otherwise the people are going to starve to death. And then when you do that, you put somebody in charge so that when the 7 years of famine come, there'll be food. You'll be able to sell it to the people, Pharaoh. You are richest. You will get richer. Oh, by the way, the famine's just not in Egypt. It's everywhere. So all the nations will come to you. You will garner more power. You will garner more wealth. You just got to need to put a wise person in charge, Pharaoh. That's what your dream means. And he leaves it. He leaves it with the advice to Pharaoh that they find somebody wise to put in charge so that the people survive and so that Pharaoh gains more power. Would you read with me what Pharaoh's response is? So Pharaoh asked them, can we find anyone like this man, one in whom is the Spirit of God? Then Pharaoh said to Joseph, since God has made all this known to you, there is no one so discerning and wise as you. You shall be in charge of my palace, and all my people are to submit to your orders. Only with respect to the throne will I be greater than you. So Pharaoh said to Joseph, I hereby put you in charge of the whole land of Egypt. I hereby put you in charge of the whole land of Egypt. Verse 46 says that Joseph was 30 years old when he entered the service of the king. How old was Joseph when his brothers threw him in the pit and sold him into slavery? Do you guys remember? 17. That's right. He was 7. He is 13 years. Did I do that math right? Yeah. 13 years of captivity and unfair and unjust. Heroic faith means knowing that when the world has forgotten you, God has not. Holding on to the fact that when the world has forgotten, God has not. And so Joseph enters the service of the king, right? He's 30 years old. Things are going on. Things unfold just like Joseph said they would in the dream, just like God revealed to him. There's 7 years of plenty. Joseph stores up all the grain. He does all these great business things. Then the famine kicks in. It says, towards the end of chapter 41, it says, when the famine had spread over the whole country, Joseph opened all the storehouses and sold grain to the Egyptians, for the famine was severe throughout Egypt, and all the world came to Egypt to buy grain from Joseph, because the famine was severe everywhere. Do you remember what Joseph's initial dream was that he mouthed off about? His initial dream were that these sheaves of wheat would gather around one sheaf of wheat that was his and would bow down to him. And now Joseph is in store of all the food source. And all the nations and all the people are coming. And yet Joseph still doesn't know where his family is. He still doesn't know where his brothers are. Now what happens on the other side of things is that the famine is happening for Joseph's family. And Jacob, Joseph's dad, is like, hey, I hear there's this guy. Why are you lazy boys sitting around here letting us starve? Go to Egypt. Go to the guy. We got plenty of money. Take the money. Go buy grain. Do you see the setup that's coming here? Do you remember what God showed Joseph in the very beginning? Would you read Genesis 42, verses 6 and the first half of verse 7 with me? Now Joseph was the governor of the land, the person who sold grain to all its people. So when Joseph's brothers arrived, they bowed down to him with their faces to the ground. As soon as Joseph saw his brothers, he recognized them. Y'all take off the high holy, right? be in this moment. Your brothers who sold you into slavery, who threw you in a pit, who have caused you. Okay, he was 30 when he went into service. There's been 7 years of famine. We're 2 years in, right? So he's cresting 40 years old. And there's your brothers bowed down low. What's she gonna do? Like, hey, remember me? Remember what I, what are you gonna do? What are we gonna do when the people who wronged us are suddenly put in front of us and we have the opportunity? Now, let's go back into this moment, because Joseph recognizes them, but that's all he knows. He has none of the other information. His little brother, Benjamin, is not with them. There's 10 of them. His baby brother that he loves, the father, not with them. He doesn't know what their status is. He doesn't know, like, did his brothers get worse? Did they get more evil? Did they off Benjamin? Like, who are they? Where's his dad? Are things okay? What is he going to do? What is his... Forget what Joseph's going to do. Because this is about how we become, go from ordinary people to heroes of the faith. In that moment, what am I going to do? What are you going to do? Online family, we going to grace or are we going to drop the hammer? Now, the next couple chapters are pretty complicated, and if you were keeping up in the reading plan, I'm going to try to fast forward through this as quickly and accurately as possible. Joseph needs to figure some things out. He needs to figure out if Benjamin is alive. He needs to figure out if his dad is alive. Where is Benjamin? What's going on? But he doesn't want to let on who he is. He doesn't want to give away his hand. And so he develops this scheme. He calls them spies. He learns about their family. He has them to dinner. He takes one of them and he's like, if you don't bring me the little brother to show, to prove to me your story's true, because I just think you're a group of spies. By the way, they are baffled. Like, everybody from every other country is going and buying grain from this guy, and suddenly he's like the madman, right? Spinning all these stories, and they're just trying to get their footing. They're like, but here's all our money. We're not spies. We just came to buy grain. And Joseph's like, yeah, no, not buying it. You got to leave one. So they're like, okay, well, Simeon, looks like it's you. Stay in prison. We'll go back and get the baby brother. Prove to this guy we're who we say we are. Like, all this confusion is happening. By the way, there's this really great moment where the brothers are talking, and it's like, they say, let me find my scripture. They said to one another, surely this is punishment for what we did to Joseph. Now, Joseph is standing right there. They have no idea Joseph speaks their language. He looks, sounds, talks, acts, walks like an Egyptian at this point. Insert the song, like an Egyptian, yeah. So all of that is happening, right? And they're like, well, this is because of what we did to Joseph. And Reuben, who wanted to save Joseph in the first place, was like, see, I told you. I guess that's Joseph's first window into the fact that Reuben was actually going to come back and save him, right? Like, I told you not to do that to Joseph. And so they go back, they go to get Benjamin, and Dad is like, absolutely not. Like, Simeon, he's over there in prison. I don't care. You're not taking my baby. I already lost Joseph. I'm still grieving. My heart can't bear the fact that I lost Joseph. There is no way I will let you take my other son, my child, my baby, to this guy. It's not happening. And so some time passes. Like, they go through the grain. I guess the brothers, they didn't try to bust Simeon out. They didn't come up with a plan. They're just like, Simeon's rotten in prison. And they're like, well, Dad said, so here we go. And so that all transpires till they run out of food. Dad finally is like, okay, one of the brothers pledges. Like, you guys keeping up? There's a lot of drama. See, there's a reason we have you guys in the reading plan throughout the week, so you can keep up with all of this, right? Family dysfunction from the audience, we hear. Yeah, like, can anybody else got family dysfunction going on? Anybody else got a couple doses of crazy going on? Yeah, I thought so. I know that we do. Rick, Pastor Rick, we don't have any dysfunction, do we? Yeah, all the dysfunction. Anyway, all this is transpiring. And the brothers take Benjamin finally and they go back. And Joseph sees Benjamin and his heart cries out. And I think at this point, Joseph just wants his brother and his dad. Like, he could care less about the rest of them. We don't know that for sure. But there's more scheming going on. Finally, the brother cries out and he's like, "Sir," because he still doesn't recognize that it's Joseph. "Sir, my father will die from grief if we don't let our baby brother come home. Like, take me in his stead. My father will die from grief." And Joseph can't take it anymore. And again, Joseph has a choice to make. Would you read this verse with me? Joseph said to his brothers, "I am Joseph. Is my father still living?" But his brothers were not able to answer him because they were terrified at his presence. Then Joseph said to his brothers, "Come close to me." Pause right there. He has a choice to make. Heroic faith doesn't walk in vengeance. Heroic faith walks in humility. Joseph says, "Come to me." Let's keep reading. When they had done so, he said, "I am your brother Joseph, the one you sold into Egypt. And now do not be distressed and do not be angry with yourselves for selling me here, because it was to save lives that God sent me ahead of you." Heroic faith walks in humility. Humility is like a force multiplier. Like, humility is like Thor's hammer. Humility is like the atmosphere, the Earth's atmosphere is to Superman. Humility is like Iron Man's suit. When it comes to our need to see things through a kingdom lens, to see things with a kingdom perspective, to have supernatural sight, to see, for Joseph to see that he has been in prison all this time, not because his brothers are jerks, but because God had a plan that Joseph would rescue and save lives. You see, humility enhances kingdom vision, which is why heroic faith walks in humility. Are we okay? How are we going to be the next time? The next time we have the opportunity to serve up just desserts or to serve up grace. Will this lesson stick? I'm going to leave that there. We finally get the Disney ending, right? Better than Disney. We finally get the supernatural happy ending in this. The brothers weep. Joseph weeps. Pharaoh hears. Joseph just doesn't send the food they need back. He sends the caravans to bring and move his entire family under his protection to where they can shepherd, where they can walk, where they can live their lives. He's reunited with his father. He's reunited with Benjamin. Everything is good. And finally, Joseph is actually walking in the promise that God made him more than 20 years before. How long will we hold on to God's promises, waiting for their fulfillment, without giving up our faith? Holding on and clinging to what God said will be. And in the midst of that, Joseph's character has gone from mouthy teenager to godly man. I think one of the truest pictures of Joseph's transformation actually comes a few years later. His father is dying. Actually, his father dies. We see in verse 50. And suddenly it occurs to the brothers that Houston, there might be a problem. Because all this time, Joseph loves his father and he loves Benjamin. But what's going to happen now that daddy's gone? Like, is this going to be the moment Joseph finally takes his revenge? It says in verse 15 of chapter 50, when Joseph's brothers saw that their father was dead, they said, "What if Joseph holds a grudge against us and pays us back for all the wrongs that we did to him?" At his core, who will Joseph be in that moment? Guys, those moments will happen in our lives. If they haven't happened for you yet, they will. Where you have the power to submit your power and let God work, or you have the power to exercise some authority over some people that have wronged and hurt you. Heroic faith chooses forgiveness. Would you read this last passage with me? His brothers then came and threw themselves down before him. "We are your slaves," they said. But Joseph said to them, "Don't be afraid. Am I in the place of God? You intended to harm me, but God intended it for what good? To accomplish what is now being done, the saving of many lives." The saving of many lives. Heroic faith chooses forgiveness because heroic faith can see and trust that God is working all things out for our good. In the midst of it all, in the end of it all, when Joseph had the choice, he chose forgiveness and he chose grace. The end of it all, it says, Joseph stayed in Egypt along with his father's family. He lived 110 years and saw the third generation of Ephraim's children. Joseph spent the first 40 years in captivity. But he saw the third generation of his son's children, and his family was restored, and he lived and he prospered. Because he had the courage to walk in humility, because he had the courage to submit, because he had the courage to forgive, because in faith he trusted God to show up. So what are we going to do with that? Like, that's the Marvel ending, right? Like, Disney doesn't even get it this good. Their princesses are always messed up anyway. But like, that's the Marvel ending. Like, everything works out. Awesome. So we're going to leave and finish our popcorn and wait for the next movie to come out? Or are we going to let this word change us, shape our character, and grow our own faith? Will we take the lessons from today and add them to last week and let them motivate us on to be more, to be who God has called us to be? The next time we are overlooked and forgotten, will we continue to bring our best for 2 days or 2 weeks or 2 months or 2 years or 2 decades? Or will we get salty and hold back our service and dedication because we've been overlooked, underappreciated, undervalued, or forgotten? Like Joseph, will we trust that God has not forgotten us and honor him in all we do? Church, in the midst of our own suffering and struggles and strife, will we see the suffering and the sadness of other people? We just going to go on with service today like earthquake didn't happen in Haiti yesterday? We just going to go on with what we want to do and not pay attention to the pain, the struggle, the challenges that we see in this town around us? In the midst of our suffering, will we take the time to see and know and love people like God calls us to do? And when we are no longer in prison, when God has finally come through on his word, which was a done deal from the beginning, will we let our own pride and our own ego and our own need for self-justification and self-righteousness bring bitterness to that moment? Or will we choose to extend the blessing of forgiveness and walk in the grace that God has, taking us as flawed, everyday, normal people and molding us into the next generation of heroes of the faith?